it's all eyes. Ladies and gentlemen, this is L.A. Williams, and this weekend, Sean and I are talking to another Vice TV star, Big Herc 916.
I jumped out the car, ran across four lanes of freeway traffic, up an embankment, and got arrested on the sidewalk, looking at the beach in the distance, and I'm like, this is the last time I'm gonna see the Pacific Ocean for a while.
So how'd you get your story featured on I Was a Teenage Felon?
Vice contacted me through my website, BigHerc916.com. They had seen my YouTube stuff, following my channel, Fresh Out.
Our YouTube work pays off, huh?
We did our first episode in 2013 with Cali Muscle, who blew up. He's all over the internet.
So obviously you have what it takes. And when you got arrested, it was like,
man, what was I thinking, man? Why did I just go back to bed that day? Why did I even leave the house, man?
I don't miss this story. I'm a millionaire from the bottom. I used to have no money, now I got it. And all these haters mad that they are not em. Against all odds, I hustle, now I got it. Yes, I'm a millionaire from the bottom.
Yes, he is, y'all.
I used to have no money, now I got it.
Get to the biz, y'all.
And all these haters mad that they are not em. Against all odds, I hustle, now I got it.
We come from nothing to everything.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, what's happening? It's your main man, L.A. Williams, the Blind Master. And who do I have across from me? But my main man, Mr. Sean V. Bradley, CSB. What's going on, Sean?
Yo, what's up, L.A.? This is SVB, and the place to be, and the place to be is against all odds.
I like your microphone, man. Bro.
Oh, you like the microphone? Don't get microphone jealousy, man. I got two microphones right here. You don't even know. This is the home studio, so I'm getting it in.
You're rolling.
All right, man. So we've got some amazing information we're going to drop in this session. We got a special VIP guest. Before we get into that, I want to just talk about just the whole power of Clubhouse. We were just explaining behind the scenes with our guests, man. Like, you know, L.A., how's Clubhouse been treating you lately, man? You've been making more connections?
Yeah, it's been crazy, man. What I said, it was wild because I've been connecting with a lot of people from the U.K., I'm actually in a group of folks from China and stuff like that. And it's crazy how your broke mind will talk to you. And it'll be telling you, like, why are you wasting your time? These people, you can't, such. And what I realized that I'm just, you know, spreading out my luck patterns. You know what I'm saying? I'm just opening up, you know, more and more people that I can work with. I mean, goodness gracious, the world is not just America, L.A. Get yourself together. So that's what I'm finding, man. It's been powerful.
Yeah, we've had some amazing people that we brought on the show. Like, for example, we just had Rebecca, you know, Zung, that's going to be a future episode. Mm-hmm. Man, you know, she's the author of the How to Negotiate with a Narcissist. And we met her because of Clubhouse and Michael Zeller. Man, it's popping. Mm-hmm. So I highly recommend that everybody's going to follow us on Clubhouse. We have the morning motivation, inspiration, and conversations with a real multimillionaire Monday through Friday, 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. with me and the Blind Master. Right, L.A.?
Absolutely. And I talk about it on a regular basis. Throughout our little commercial breaks and things like that, I always remind people. But man, today is going to be special because today we have a gentleman. It's crazy because this gentleman, he actually featured on the Vice TV
show.
God
damn it, tell him already. Who?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to put you on to my main man, Big Herc 916. We'll be right back on Against All Odds.
Vice TV presents
I Was a Teenage Felon
Season 2, starring Sean V. Bradley.
He's the king of clubs.
At 19 years old, part of a multi-million dollar international drug ring. Arrested by the Secret Service, DEA.
This was the largest ecstasy case in United States history.
And somehow this dude becomes a best-selling author and a mega millionaire when he gets out of prison.
Find out how only on Vice TV's I Was a Teenage Felon, Mondays at 10 p.m.
Exclusively on Vice TV.
Did you know that Car.com is a website to connect consumers like you, me, our parents, basically everybody to local car dealers? Car.com helps us find that perfect vehicle. From new vehicles to certified pre-owned, Car.com will help you find the best vehicle match. Car.com practically started the online car shopping experience. Peace of mind and finding your perfect vehicle, it's what they do. Car.com, we do the research, you do the driving. Get started getting that peace of mind today at Car.com.
Yo, this is your host, Sean V. Bradley. And I know you hear me every week on this radio show, but did you know that I'm the star of Vice TV's hit show, I Was a Teenage Felon, Season 2? It airs every Monday at 10 p.m. So make sure you check out my show, I Was a Teenage Felon, on Vice TV.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are back on the Against All Odds radio show. And of course, we got Sean V. Bradley. But as promised, I'm bringing to you my main man. Listen, he's all over YouTube. He's got the Fresh Out show and all kind of cool stuff. Listen, but this is Big Herc 916. Listen to his voice.
You're on, baby.
Big Herc 916. Positivity, motivation, man.
Yo, that's listen. What I'm talking about, man.
Listen, you sound so smooth, but like you are like Big and Diesel, man. Like, so you used to be a, let's start with this, you, like, because this is radio, so people can't see you. So like you used to be a like a professional bodybuilder at one point, am I correct?
No, nah, you know, I just really worked out to stay in shape and to keep the bullies up off me. You know, I grew up in a neighborhood, man. It was, everybody had big brothers, and when you go to play street ball, man, if you were soft, you get punked. And I wasn't trying to get beat up, man. So I started working out probably 13, 14, man, just to put a little meat on my chest, man, so I could, you know, throw these hands.
There you go.
Yeah, okay, but wait a minute. Look, man, stop. You're being modest. Okay, so maybe you wasn't professional like Arnold Schwarzenegger stuff, but you were like, you were big and jacked like that, though. So there's a point of just getting big, and then there's a point of just getting like Lou Ferrigno, you know what I'm saying, like the Rock big. So when did you decide to get to that like super shredded level?
Well, you know, at a young age, I would say once I started working out, I kind of became conscious of like food. So I started eating a little bit different. You know, I was one of those people that didn't eat a lot of the junk food. And I kind of started reading up on nutrition. And out of high school, I wanted to be a professional bodybuilder and then maybe a football player. But then after I started researching bodybuilding, there was no money. So I'm like, damn, if you're bodybuilding, you're practically living in your car because you're eating all the time. So, you know, I just kept working out, but I had other ambitions after that. But it was always just something for me. It's meditative. It's like a form of discipline. And I grew up on a military base, and I used to always see the Marines in the gym, jacked, working out up in there with them orange shorts on swole. So I'm like, you know, I looked up to those guys, man, because I felt like, you know, these guys were about their business. So I always took pride in taking care of my body.
No, much respect on that. So how I came across you, it's crazy because I didn't put two and two together. As I mentioned in a pre-show interview, man, like I've been a huge fan of like Lock Up Raw. I don't know why I'm addicted to prison movies. Just, you know, going through all that stuff, it's still intriguing to me. But so I've seen your YouTube show, obviously Fresh Out, and I just think it's dope. A little bit of crazy people that troll in there, but like the content's good, and I understand the message trying to do. But then, man, what really, you know, I got a better understanding of you and your story was on that Vice TV show, I Was a Teenage Felon. So talk to us, first of all. Well, how did Vice find out about you, and how did you get hooked up with Vice? And tell us about, you know, how that whole thing happened, and you know, why were you on Vice?
Vice contacted me through my website, bigherc916.com. They had seen my YouTube stuff, and so they have been following my channel, Fresh Out, and they sent me an email, and we coordinated the shoot, and basically set up an interview. And from there, this all came together. You know, I had them, they wanted a couple of people they could interview about my background. So I had my mom, I had a couple of my homies that I went to school with, that I grew up with on the episode. And I kind of broke down my story because, you know, I've been through juvenile, I've been through California Youth Authority, and I've been to the feds, you know. So I've seen every facet of the criminal justice system. And, you know, I could speak on it from a firsthand perspective.
So talk us through it with just some of the highlights in here. So when you were younger, what part of California are you from?
I'm from Sacramento.
Okay. And so you were getting involved in crazy stuff at what age?
Actually, I never got in trouble, man. I was a straight A student, 4.0, all the way up until probably 14, 15, I was in a skateboard and BMX, you know, I was pre-X Games, you know, I used to want to be a professional skateboarder, man. That was my thing. I was like, probably the only black skateboarder in my neighborhood, you know, wearing Jimmy Z's and Vans and skateboarding and stuff, man. And so that was my passion.
Cool.
But, you know, it came a point where it seemed like I couldn't afford the skateboard stuff anymore, the decks and the parts. And so I kind of got more into basketball. And then from basketball, I kind of gravitated to wanting to be more accepted by the hood. So I kind of related to the drug game. And then I wanted to become a drug dealer. You know what I mean? I seen these guys were kind of like the reputable dudes in the neighborhood. So I got involved in selling drugs.
When, before we go into that lane, I want to let you know something. Your boy SVB used to skate. Question for you. When you used to skate, were you skating street or skating ramp?
I skated street, man. We used to go to San Francisco. So we skated 8th Street, Chinatown, Banks, Embarcadero. I skated with, I've seen like back in the days, Tommy Guerrero, Steve Caballero, Natas Kappas. Rob Roscoe, you know, all these guys, man. We would go in Frisco. You would see dudes would show up, man, and it'd be like, dude, it'd be off the chains.
You remember Blind Skateboards with Jason Lee and Gonzalez and those guys?
Yep. Yeah, Smith Sticks.
So what was your go-to trick? Like, for me, I used to do, my favorite tricks were like Ollie Impossibles, 360 kick flicks, 360 heel flips, things like that.
I had just perfected the Ollie wall ride.
Okay.
A ho-ho, kickflips, Japan air, method air, judo air. We didn't have a lot of skate parks, so it was, you know, you skated the street.
Yes.
And then only one guy in the neighborhood had a half pipe. So, you know, I had just learned how to get air and start skating ramp. But, I mean, it was far and few between in Sacramento. Nobody had that kind of finances to have a ramp in the backyard.
Yeah, me too. I pools and ramps was never my thing. And I felt, like, awkward in that stuff. Like, you know, like shredded on the street, that was my ish. All right, cool. I just wanted to reminisce because it's very rare that I get to talk to a fellow, you know, skateboarder. And that's what's up. Okay, so now you related more to the drug dealers. Was it just drug dealers or gangbangers as well, too? Because there's a difference. Some of them do both.
Well, it came a point, I guess I was, you know, going, my mom was, it was in a transitional period where I went from skateboarding, living on a military base, moving back to the hood. And in the part of the hood we lived at, it just happened to be on a dope street. So I used to see like these penitentiary dudes and, you know, guys in cutlasses with D's on it and, you know, Jerry curls and all these just like gangster type dudes. And I started like, you know, it piqued my curiosity. You know, I'm the oldest of three kids. And so I'm a latchkey kid. My mom's at work all day. And so gradually it intrigued me. And then I started seeing like, you know, some of the girls at school were hooking up these older guys. They were doing, they were basically doing R. Kelly. They were coming up to school. They graduated 3-4 years before, but they're cherry picking all our young girls. So I'm like thinking like, damn, man, if I had D-boy money, then I would be the man too. You know, I could be one of these guys. And so I made a bad choice, man. And I said, you know, I started asking around and seeing how I can get into the crack game, man. And, you know, and this time it was in the late 86, 87, I want to say, maybe 87, 88. Mm-hmm. And so, I got involved in selling drugs and for a short period of time. And it just created this whole different side of me that, you know, between the drugs and like, you know, that tied into like repping the neighborhood too.
And then you went from selling drugs into, was it like robberies or bank robberies?
Well, I did 6 months in juvenile hall and the boys ranch for selling drugs and got out of there. And then my mom got married. So I was able to stay out of trouble for a while because we moved down to Orange County, which was like suburbia. So that was like an experience I didn't really capitalize on because I didn't really understand it. I felt like a fish out of water. But as soon as I graduated, I went right back to the hood. And when I went right back to the hood, I got right back into the thick of things, banging, getting shot at. And I ended up giving a guy a ride to a situation, and it was a home invasion. And I ended up getting accessory to home invasion when I was 18.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man. Wow. So then when did you decide, because you did so much at a young age and then you got into the adult, you know, film industry. Like I'm trying to process how it went from like all that quick. How long was the time period from skater to drug dealer to the robbery to the porn industry?
Skateboarder all the way up until the time, probably I was 15 before I hung up the skateboard, got into selling drugs. That was short lived. We moved out the hood down to Orange County, stayed out of trouble for a while. And then my mom, you know, being that they were in the military, they moved back east. I should have went back east with them, but I went back to Sacramento, right back into like just a horrible situation, gang banging, you know, everybody, you know, robbing. Everybody was doing so. I know guys used to set up drug dealers back then with females and rob them. So everybody was doing some type of really, you know, street stuff. So I ended up entertaining a guy at that time, like I said, for the home invasion. I got locked up from 18 to 21, moved back to Southern California on my own, and then got into the adult entertainment industry for a little while. And then from there, at 21, I did that for a little while, then went back to college, and then got into selling weed. So then I was, you know, moved up. I was living in like the Golden Triangle up in the Bay Area by Mendocino and Humboldt. I was in Santa Rosa, so I started selling weed and got involved in some other drug stuff. And then essentially got involved at 24 and I entertained a bank robbery. And that's what sent me to the feds for 120 months.
Mm. So that you had 120 plus months just for the bank robbery?
Yeah. It's 7 years for the gun and then another 5 years for the actual bank robbery. So it ended up calculating after points and everything. I was sentenced to 120 months.
No, they gave them consecutively to you?
It was all concurrent. Well, yeah, because the bank robbery itself and then, yeah, they're actually consecutive because you get.
Yeah, I was going to say, yo, that's crazy.
Bank robbery is self-carried. I mean, the deal was.
Damn.
The deal was 14 years, but I actually, right before I got sentenced, I started researching the law. So I knocked off 2 years off my sentence and I got it down to 10 and ended up doing pleading out to 120 months.
Yeah, because usually when I was in the feds, it was 5 years mandatory minimum for a gun charge. You know what I mean? But man, they hit you with the bank robbery and that consecutive. That's I got to watch.
Yeah, because it's messed up. Bank robbery. Yeah. You committed an armed felony with a possession of a firearm. So the firearm is what gave me the extra time.
So how old were you when you went to prison?
24.
Okay, and so obviously you pled guilty. You didn't go to trial, did you?
No. My co-defendant, he ended up, he had 100 pages of discovery. He told everything.
Oh, man.
Wow.
So you pled guilty, and what was that like? Take us through that. What's that like being in your you know, mid-20s, you know what I'm saying, and pleading guilty to that many years? Like, what was that mindset that you thought about?
Horrible, man. You feel like a piece of poo-poo, man. I mean, dude, you know, you realize the game is up. And then, you know, for me, you know, I didn't really have any direction at that time because I was just doing so many different things. Therefore, you make choices on the whim and you don't think about the ramification of those choices until you have time to sit down, like we talked about before, and really think. And when I started thinking and I started looking around and the people that were in there and just the level of conversation, I'm like, man, what was I thinking, man? Why did I just go back to bed that day? Why did I even leave the house, man? Why did I, you know, and I'm looking at the dude, my co-defendants, and, you know, he's real, you know, I'm looking at these dudes, they're clowns. I'm like, I didn't see this before. And so I'm mad at myself, man. I feel like I let myself down. I let my family down. And it's just horrible, bro. So I just started really researching, studying the law. I hooked up with some guys from, you know, some Hawaiians and some other guys, and I went to the law library. I basically stopped talking to my co-defendants. I just really went on my own tangent, went on a soul, like a spiritual mission to find myself and to really figure out how did I make the choices that led to the bank robbery? Because you don't wake up one day and decide to rob a bank. It's a gradual progression of bad choices that leads to ultimately a horrible choice, which is all karma building up. So the karma had caught up to me, man, and I realized I had to deal with it.
So, and here's the thing that's interesting, because you are an amazing interviewer. Like, I've watched a lot of your episodes. And so you've had these conversations with a lot of convicts. And there's a difference between inmates and convicts. You know what I'm saying? So you've had like thorough people you've interviewed. And this has come up too. Like, man, that split second, you made a choice that's going to change your life. And mm-hmm. and being so young, not thinking about the ramifications. But here's my question for you, is that some people, you know this from being in prison, when they take that much time, there's either the F it mentality and, yo, I'm going all in. If I'm going to do this time, you know what I mean? I'm going to do this time and I'm going to turn around and I'm going to handle my business this way. And there's other people that basically say, man, wow, they have an epiphany like, oh my God, I messed up. Let me try to put my life together. So if I'm understanding, when this happened, did you have the instant rationalization, or did you go through a transition of anger and lashing out and just, you know, hitting that yard with the mission? Or did you start from like, oh man, this is a wake up call? Like, how did that happen? Instantaneously or gradually, the evolution?
I had my epiphany and the day I got arrested, when we had the high speed chase with the police, bike strip, the rain, I jumped out the car, ran across four lanes of freeway traffic, up an embankment, and got arrested on the sidewalk, looking at the beach in the distance. And I'm looking around and I'm like, it hit me right then. Like, this is the last time I'm gonna see the Pacific Ocean for a while. Hmm. You know, I had an epiphany while I was being cuffed. Like, it's a wrap. And I'm thinking, man, I could have easily been in bed in my little West LA apartment, enjoying life and, you know, continuing on with my journey. But I decided to go and rob this bank, thinking that it could be possibly a good idea. I don't know how I even entertained that as a good idea.
Well,
so I had that right then.
Now, the whole chase was filmed on TV too, am I correct?
Yeah, I'm quite sure. There's video. I found a picture of me jumping across the freeway somewhere. Wow. Somebody had it.
That's crazy.
Did your family watch you on TV during the chase?
I don't think they watched me. My mom was back east, man, but they found out later and they couldn't believe it because, I mean, you know, I wasn't, like I said, a bad kid. I wasn't into drugs. I didn't do stuff to get high. I wasn't like, I never even smoked weed, man. I drank maybe before that four or five times. So it wasn't like I was like, but I was always trying to calculate. And I was always one of those guys where if I felt I wanted to come up so bad that I would do damn or anything, like I was ready, like I was an all or nothing dude. So I'm like, man, if I just get this come up, I can take that money, I can flip it, start a record label. You know, I had all these ideas.
Yeah, and that's the kind of stuff that you think just as a lay person. You're like, man, goodness gracious. Because everybody, you know, thought about robbing a bank. Well, I ain't gonna say everybody, but a lot of people, it's like, yo, man, anytime you think about when you broke, it's like, so what you gonna do? I don't know, we're gonna rob a bank? Now, obviously, most people don't, you know, go ahead and go through with it, but that's like a normal thing that you hear. Everybody's talking about it, robbing a bank. So, I mean, you're saying it's like
maybe
a
in the hood, decision. LA.
Right, yeah, exactly, right. But maybe you're saying it was a bad decision, but I don't know. I know a lot of people that actually think about that stuff. We're going to hear more from Big Herc, y'all.
Against All Odds
is on your radio after these messages.
Vice TV presents
I Was a Teenage Felon
Season 2, starring Sean V. Bradley.
He's the king of clubs.
At 19 years old, part of a multi-million dollar international drug ring. Arrested by the Secret Service, DEA.
This was the largest ecstasy case in United States history.
And somehow this dude becomes a best-selling author and a mega millionaire when he gets out of prison.
Find out how only on Vice TV's I Was a Teenage Felon, Mondays at 10 p.m.
Exclusively on Vice TV.
From nothing to everything.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are back on the Against All Odds radio show, and we're having a conversation with Big Herc, who actually talked about getting arrested, jumping across highways and stuff, almost made it to the ocean, you know, right after, I guess this was robbing a bank. So you said that, I heard you say that was a bad idea, right? Is it a bad idea because you got caught, or is robbing a bank just a bad idea? I want to know.
It's a bad idea all the way around the board, man. Once I put it into perspective, and I got to prison and seen that, that little bit of, you know, $107,000, mm-hmm. you had guys making that in a day, in a week in prison. And just overall, had I had somebody in my ear on the street, I would have put that same tenacity into maybe, you know, studying, you know, corporate law or real estate or business. I would have put it in another direction because it was good it was the wrong energy in a negative direction.
Right. Gotcha. It's crazy.
All right. So I want to jump into this because I'm really intrigued because, I got a lot of respect for you because when I got knocked, I was 19 years old and I was, you know, I'm Belizean, Hispanic, and Sicilian, but I used to speak Russian for the army and in college. So when I hit the feds, I was with the Italians and the Russians. When I was in the state, I had state charges too. I was with like kings and yatas and things like that. But so my mentality wasn't positivity because I was mad. I was angry. And I was looking at it at 19 years old to have the connects. I'm in the feds with people from the Medellin cartel. I thought I was going to, you know, like literally just get connected up and leave and have a freaking like criminal empire. I was on some stupid ish as a kid. You, on the other hand, had that epiphany when you were like running across the barrier, you know, getting chased by the police on a bank robbery. But when you were about to hit that yard and you had that much time, you weren't, I'm not saying worried in a punk way, but you still have got to be like, man, people on some BS in jail, especially in a prison. Like what was your mentality hitting that yard for the first time? Cause you know that there's prison politics, there's shot callers, there's this and that. What was your mindset when you hit that yard and how you're going to have to engage the sentence?
I had already kind of put myself on a path of enlightenment. And so I was seeking, a higher level of just consciousness. And I think by doing that, I realized how energy works and I was able to kind of channel in that energy. But, when I hit Lompoc USP in 2000, they were on lockdown. They call USP Lompoc the castle. The average dude in there is doing 20, 30 years. Most dudes in there, you know, Carmine Persico was there, the Colombo family. Mm-hmm. They got kingpins in there. You know, you got guys in there 5 lives plus 100 years. I mean, crazy sentences. That is crazy. But it was on lockdown, so I rolled up, man, and, you know, it's like hitting a dog kennel, and everybody's looking at you through the gauge. Hey, cuz, hey, blood, where you from? Yo, homie, who you roll with? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm looking around, man, I'm hearing all this, and they're asking me, what do you claim? Who are you going to put you in a cell with? And I'm just like, you know, trying to channel. And, you know, at this point, you have no hygiene. You've been traveling. You know, it's just you feel like garbage. And so I had already put in my mind that I'm just passing through. So I never called myself an inmate or a convict. And I never accepted being a number because you become a number in there. You got to know a number. And that number is what you identify by. And that's how they take away your humanity. Once you take away humanity, you become an animal. Once you become an animal, it's hard to get back to being a human again and realizing that people have emotions. People are human beings. So I never want to become that animal. So I never adapted the whole mentality that I'm a convict, I'm an inmate. I always, from day one, once the yard opened up at USP Lompoc, I was in a law library. I was talking to guys to try to figure out how to maybe file an appeal somewhere. Maybe they made a mistake. Maybe there's a way to get out early. Maybe there's a law that I missed or didn't know about. So I hung around like guys from the nation and guys that were, you know, OGs who, you know, teach me how to shepherdize cases and how to look up case law, study the Black's Law Dictionary. So that was my journey. And because of how I carried myself, I attracted a different type of guy in prison,
right?
And I met my mentors in there, and these guys guided me. Yeah. So the feds, you know, it's political, but it's at a higher level, so you can actually network with a guy who's Spanish or white if you guys are seeking to get out of prison. And so one of my mentors was a white guy, ex-Vietnam veteran. He really put me up on game on the Black's Law, congressional acts. Acts of Congress, the U.S. Attorney's Manual. And when he was feeding me all this knowledge, I literally felt like my head was going to explode. Like, man, I've been played. I said, man, I'm reading the laws and I'm thinking about when they ask you certain things in court and you say, yeah, you consent to go to prison. I consented. I went in there and act like I knew what they were saying. And my attorney just kept saying, just say yeah. And I'm thinking, man, I'm like, how can I reverse this issue? So I was messed up, man. I had sleepless nights, and that's all I did every day was go to a law library. And I had guys actually try to fight me because they see me studying all the time.
That's crazy. So what was the difference between the first time you went to prison or you got locked up and the second time? What do you think was the major difference that made the epiphany happen the second time versus the first time when you did the couple years?
Maturity, man. And that's one thing a lot of you youngsters, I keep telling them, man, you think you know, man. You wake up one day like you're a raw type of dude. You're, you know, with that knife and all this. And then you get older and you start thinking like, man, I messed up. I wasted this time. I made some bad choices. I wish I would have done different. See, nobody talks about that. When you're young and you're 19, 20, 21, 20, you know, you're ready about the business. Mm-hmm. But you got to realize that you're just thinking short term. You know, once you start getting around some OGs, I was around, my mentors were 20 years my senior. These guys, one guy, Vietnam veteran, one guy, you know, he had been to Merriam. I mean, these guys were, you know, big, you know, had made millions of dollars on the street. And so when I started talking to them and they started teaching me things about myself as far as being a man, I realized that, man, I didn't know nothing. I was lost, man. I was a lost soul out there at 24, man. I didn't know nothing. And that's what led to me making these horrible choices. So I just like, I really was hard on myself. And then I had to be humble to be able to accept these life lessons, man. And the darkest place on earth in this, and you know, it's Long Park, man. It ain't no, dude, you touch the TV and somebody's watching that TV, man. Mm. It ain't no, what? It ain't no talking. Mm-hmm. Immediately go get your knife.
Herc, let's break that down for a second here. Like, again, I was only in SCI in a medium security at Allenwood, and then I told you the low security at Fort Dix. But, you know, respect carries even in medium security. So even, and for example, if somebody buffs the floor, you can't just walk on a man's floor. Oh. You know, right. You're getting blown up, man. That's it.
Dude,
or cutting in front of lines. You know what's hard? I only did 3 years, but like when I go to like the mall and I go to the food court, it's gotta be worse for you. But like when people bump into you in line and reach over you, you're getting stuck in the dining hall. If you try to reach over another man's food and grab stuff.
Crap.
Yeah, right. It's a wrap, right or wrong.
Hey, no, I seen somebody one time. Dude's like, sit over. He's like, dude, don't ever sit at that table. That's a Latin King table. And dude's like, oh, nah, dude, don't sit over there. This is the Latin Kings. This is DC. This is the Bloods. This is the Crips. This is the dudes from Florida. This is the neutral table. You got to know your position, man. You get in the wrong line. You touch the wrong thing, dude. It ain't. I seen a dude in the kitchen, OG dude. He was doing four lives. Dude, some youngsters stomped him out so bad under the table. Everybody just kept eating. Stomped his butt out, man. Kicked him, punished him. And then everybody's kept eating. And then we hurry up and just left. I mean, he was up there curled up, man. I mean, dude, you do not. It's like nobody's playing up in there. Nobody's playing, man. And they had a group in Long Park. The warden, they called, I forgot his nickname, but his staff, he called them the Cowboys. These dudes would come around. And if they wanted to get you, they'll come around at night. Pop your cell open, strip you down, hog tie you. They weren't playing no games, man. They ran that thing like some gangsters. I mean, he was embezzling money from Unicor and all kind of stuff, man.
Wow. Yeah, people don't understand. And we talked about this before the interview. I want to talk about it here. One thing about prison is that if you're a punk on the street, you're going to be a punk in prison. Yeah. But if you are, I don't mean just in a sexual way. I mean in any way. Just if you're a bitch, you know what I mean? And we're on broadcast radio, so I can only use certain words. But in prison, you're stripped of your cars, your clothes, and your money. And yeah, there's people that have businesses in there and they get more commissary, but you're all in khakis in the feds. You have the same commissary. You got this. And so what I respected about the prison culture is that you stand on the merits of your word and your honor and respect. And if you follow the rules of engagement, you know what I mean? There, you give respect, you mind your own business. Chances are you'll be all right. But if you start, like, I've seen people that come with that rah-rah stuff, they used to like blazing on the block and putting in work on the block, they'll be the ones that are hurting, crying at night because they ain't trying to hear that. You can't come in there acting all roddy, especially like you said, when people are doing life plus this. I got my manitos, my people in the feds. They're right now in Arizona, you know what I mean, doing life plus 30. And again, they ain't trying to play. I mean, like, this is not kiddie camp. This is where, like, real people go for the rest of their life, and you have to adjust the way that you act. And I learned a lot about human nature and about just psychology and strategy and dealing with people. Just, you could know, man, when stuff's about to pop off by body language, how people are standing, how people are acting. You could just feel that in the air right before it's going to get popped off. And then people are oblivious on the streets right now. You know, they don't have a clue what's going on. And I'm like, man, you need to have situational awareness, because I don't know how you survive out of the womb. You wouldn't survive like in certain environments, fam, for real. You agree?
Well, even you made a point that, see, in prison, people think that they could hide from things they've done. I've seen guys on the yard that's been programming, you know, raw, super gangster, whatever, Crip or Blood, and somebody show up like, hey, man, I was on another yard with this dude. You don't know about him? And then they bring the paperwork. They have their girl sending the paperwork. Immediately, you go from being somebody that was cool to removed. Yeah. Just like that. There's no playing around. You cannot hide. If you snitched, if you ran and didn't help a homie on a yard, or you were dirty on another yard, you know, people think they can check in and pop up at another place across the country. You can't shake your past, man. That stuff's in prison. Your word is everything. I've had guys right now that have reached out to me that I've seen in prison, but I never had one word. And they'll say, hey, Big Herc, man, I remember you from Long Park, man. You was always in the law library. People are watching you. So if you were a piece of garbage, or you were on some weird time in there, dude, don't think that it won't follow you here.
100%. So can you tell us some rules or etiquette in prison that you think applies to mainstream society, or should apply to mainstream society? You know what I mean?
Oh, man. I mean, just general respect, man. I mean, yeah. A lot of guys, you know, the way you carry yourself, people be like, oh, man, I can see that, you know, you were raised by some good family, man, or, you know, you had good upbringing, man. You know how to, you're courteous, you know how to address something, or, you know, like you said, you don't see somebody mopping and step right over where they just mopped at, and they're looking at you like, dude, you know, where people now, I mean, you go to the gym, people, they'll stand right in front of you, or in a grocery store, people are disrespectful, or just, you know, little stuff that, if people had a little common courtesy and learned these certain things, like, I was taught by my grandmother a lot of Southern hospitality. You open the door, you say, excuse me, you don't interrupt people. You always, you know, if you come into a room, you don't come in begging. You show, you know, you show respect, you know, for your elders. And that's how I was taught. But a lot of that has been done away with. And, you know, these kids have no sense of respect, or how they talk to older people. They don't give them their props, man. And these are people who have been around on earth longer than you. You're supposed to show them some type of respect, man. And I know it goes, you know, vice versa, but it's a lot of that has been lost. And I think the decline of moral values is what's resulted in a lot of the problems we have on the street. And if you have that mentality, like these guys going to jail now, they you know, a lot of them are subject to wig splits, but the jail's changed too, because it's not the same type of character.
Man, this is phenomenal. So let's talk about when you got out of prison. Did you have a plan for your career? Because people talk about matriculating back to society after doing almost a decade in prison with some serious charges. Were you stressed out or worried about getting a job and being? And did you have supervised release?
Oh yeah, 5 years. Yeah,
so, same exact.
Yeah, I never considered filling out a job application when I got out. I've never filled out a job application. My thing was, I had a group of guys, which were a combination of Belizean, Korean, white guy, black guy, Hispanic. And we used to have study groups, and we would come together in a library, and every night we would study for 2 hours, either the law, talk about business, put together these plans. I got a journal. I had a stack of journals that I would keep with me, and I'd write down notes, cut out articles out of Fortune magazine, Forbes magazine, and my goal was to get out and actually come up with a TV show and be a producer and get into like just production as far as with a network. And that's kind of like what my whole game plan was. And leading up to that, I had little hustles in between there that I plan on implementing, buying and selling cars, getting into personal training, just things that would allow me to piggyback until I found my big opportunity. And that's what I did. So I stuck to that. I never it wasn't like I was in prison, but my mind wasn't in prison. Mm-hmm. Every day, I didn't watch TV in prison. You know, I didn't sit down and watch all these Telemundo, BT, and watch, you know, a lot of these guys, they watch TV for hours. The latest video, these dudes would be in there shaking their heads. I'm like, dude, do you guys do this? This is the same video from yesterday, you know? So my thing was always trying to figure out, if I got out tomorrow, I'm like, man, if they change, what would I do? And I used to say that if they said, everybody, you guys can leave tomorrow, half the guys would look around and be like, man, I still got 3 more years, man. I'm cool. I still got, they weren't ready. Mm-hmm. So my whole thing was always keeping my mind ready for when I got out, what would be my plan? And that's kind of like how I programmed myself, man. So when I got out, I just kind of like put together my little plans and try to reconnect with people and network, man. And eventually I started my own network with YouTube.
So tell us about that. The name of this show, you have a couple shows, right?
Yeah. Fresh Out was one of the shows I came up with in prison, which, you know, I was walking the track and I thought about like, man, what about a show when it shows ex-felons that get out of prison, but not the ones that keep going back, but the ones that got out that were successful? Because, you know, everybody thinks like, you know, what are you going to do when you get out? You know, and you say, oh, man, I'm going to do this. And yeah, right, man. You're not going to do that. Or, man, you know, you're not going to be able to do that. And I always had a DuPont Rob Report or, you know, an Architectural Digest. And I had a vision board and people would hate and be like, why you always walk around though? You think you're going to buy a car like that? You think you're going to do this? I'm like, yeah, man. But I programmed myself. So when I got out, I just kept that same mentality. And so when I, you know, I put all that into place so that when these opportunities presented themselves, I was ready.
Yeah, man, it sounds just like on the outside, everybody always hating anytime somebody want to do something positive, man. We'll hear more when we come back. Against all odds. Right after these messages.
Did you know that Car.com is a website to connect consumers like you, me, our parents, basically everybody to local car dealers? Car.com helps us find that perfect vehicle. From new vehicles to certified pre-owned, Car.com will help you find the best vehicle match. Car.com practically started the online car shopping experience. Peace of mind and finding your perfect vehicle, it's what they do. Car.com, we do the research, you do the driving. Get started getting that peace of mind today at Car.com.
Vice TV presents
I Was a Teenage Felon
Season 2 starring Sean V. Bradley.
He's the king of clubs.
At 19 years old, part of a multi-million dollar international drug ring. Arrested by the Secret Service, DEA.
This was the largest ecstasy case in United States history.
And somehow this dude becomes a best-selling author and a mega millionaire when he gets out of prison.
Find out how only on Vice TV's I Was a Teenage Felon, Mondays at 10 p.m.
Exclusively on Vice TV.
You know, I like listening to shows like this because you get all types of cool advice on business, parenting, just about everything. But if you're looking for some coaching that applies directly to you, then go to meetwiththemaster.com and book some time on my calendar.
From nothing to everything.
Yo, this is SVB and you're rocking with Against All Odds with my man, the Blind Master. And super VIP yesterday is Big Herc 916. And you know, we're just talking about your amazing YouTube show, Fresh Out. And brother, how many views have you had so far?
We've over 250 million.
Yo, that's crazy. That's a quarter billion. You know what I mean? 250 million views.
A lot of people.
So that tells you that, yeah, that's a lot of people that are interested in, you know, prison, you know. So I got to ask you a question. I've been dying this whole entire interview is this. You have a signature line talking about busting cheeks. So how the heck did that come about? And tell us a little bit about that real quick.
Oh, man, busting cheeks, man. Me and my Belizean homie, man, we used to always check out the female guards that would come in. And, you know, and basically compare notes. And we'd be like, man, if I got an opportunity to catch her in the office, man, I'd bust her cheeks, man. And so that was like our little hook saying. And he would look at me and laugh, and I'd look at him and laugh, man. We go to the kitchen, and we see a staff member. We like, man, bust her cheeks right there, huh? I'm like, yeah. And so, you know, I'm fresh out. That's kind of been one of the things we implemented as far as just like getting out here. And I said, man, when I got out of prison, I was on a mission to bust as many female cheeks as I could.
Yeah, that is hysterical. And by the way, I don't know if you caught it before. I'm first generation in this country. My father's from Belize. So there you go.
Yeah, that was my homie, man, from Belize.
Yeah, no doubt. Sean Poe also is from Belize. His dad was the prime minister up in there.
You know what I mean? Wow, okay.
Yeah, from Bad Boy Records. Yeah, really? For sure. So, man, that's crazy. So why do you think that your show is such a big hit? Because honestly, 250 million views is a lot of views on a YouTube show, especially about prison. But that shows like Lock Up Raw and Fresh Out intrigue people. What do you think the intrigue is?
People, it's almost like people want to be from that life, but don't want to be from that life. You know, it's almost like people want to be able to say, hey, man, I'm a hit man. But then when it comes with the, you know, the ramifications of it, they don't want any part of that. Mm-hmm. But it's cool if you can say, oh, man, you know, I'm this and I'm that. So when they watch it, they vicariously live through the people on the show. And so that's what I think the attraction there is. And, you know, we did our first episode in 2013 with Cali Muscle, who blew up. He's all over the internet. And, you know, from there, I took our channel to another level. But it's kind of ironic that, you know, there's a lot of spinoffs. But when we've actually talked to people about taking the channel to a network, one of the things is that they said that we were glamorizing prison. I've heard this before, because everybody we've interviewed has been somewhat successful. And I'm like, that's the whole point, is, you know, giving hope and showing that, you know, prison doesn't have to mean that you're not capable of accomplishments.
Yeah.
And what it is I come to find out that the psychology behind prison is, if, and I tell people, it's like, dude, if you say that you can't do this, you can't do that, you blame the system, you don't have no felonies, you got a degree, you've never been locked up, what's your excuse?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
When you see a felon get out and he's making high six figures, seven figures, he's balling, got the new band, you know, big house. A lot of people feel like, well, how's he doing this? And, you know, prison, you got in trouble, that you shouldn't be able to. Why shouldn't he? Why couldn't they be successful?
Mm-hmm. It's not, don't have to be the end of you.
You just said my whole DNA. Listen to me, this is verified. I've generated my clients $1.3 billion in additional revenue. I've made Herc myself $46 million in personal income. We're not talking about four or five, we're talking about 40. That's how come I got this national radio show. And again, for me, if somebody didn't give me a chance when I came home from prison to get into the car industry, I used to sell cars, and I was a salesman of the month, salesman of the year, and I spent 5 years you know, on the front lines, and I've owned my big company, Dealer Synergy, for 17 years. So it took me 17 years to become an overnight success. But after losing 6 years of my life from juvenile and adult facilities, you know, being $50,000 in debt, because I was at Rider University, I was in the Army Reserves and ROTC when I caught my case. So I'm a college dropout, ex-convict, ex-gang member, you know, all of that stuff. And still, I just never was going to be a statistic. I was never going to, you know, reoffend. I was never going to go back, because I knew I was capable. And what's crazy is, I told you I wasn't mentally ready in prison to do my time productively, but I got schooled by some thorough people like you, and thorough people that were older, but I was just too stupid a knucklehead back then to listen. But when I got out of prison, the lessons I learned from those OGs that were trying to put me onto the right stuff, you know, when I was ready, when I was like 22, 23 years old, I remembered all the lessons. And then I did remember, and I said it on my show a lot, there's one thing I did get from the program in prison, is people, places, and things. If you want to change, you need to change the people that you surround yourself with, the things that you do, and the places that you go. So if you want to really change, and then my friend, this, I don't know if you heard of DJ, you know, Verrett, DJ Verrett, he's a Los Angeles Crip. He did 17 years straight, came home and became an actor on the Sons of Anarchy and NCIS, is a friend of mine. I interviewed him on the show, and he says, you know, Sean, I changed. LA, you say it. He changed one thing. What was that one thing he changed?
Every damn thing.
That's it. You know what I mean? It's like, that's the one thing he's changed, is every damn thing in his life. And he went from, you know, living a life in a maze to living an amazing life. So for me to you, what do you see is your next step? Because you were inspired millions of people. You know what I mean? You've given people an insight of the reality of prison, not the glamorification, but the reality of it. You've given feedback before you go to prison. Here's things you need to be able to do to stay on point. And I'm going to tell you, a lot of people watch your show from my research because they know they're about to go in, and your show gives them game, gives them pointers so they don't get into situations they're not prepared to handle, especially if they're not about that life. You give some free advice on how to bid, you know, without, you know, bidding, you know, uncomfortably. And then you also showcase that there is life after prison, that you could have meaningful, you know, value to the world. You don't have to just be, you know, air conditioning repairman and be depressed. You could, if that's what you want to do, God bless you. But if you want to do more, be more, and achieve more. So talk about that. What's next for Big Herc 916?
Just getting more into public speaking, man. I want to get on the whole public speaking circuit and take my message as far as urgency, as far as just determination to the next level, because, you know, a lot of people need that motivation. Somebody asked me, they're like, man, how do you become confident, man? How do you, you know, what drives you? You know, why what makes you get up and want to do these different things? Because a lot of people, they don't have it. They're just like, they have no vision. They have no hobbies. They have no interest in life. Everything's kind of like just whatever I can Uber eat to the house. You know, I mean, I'm cool. And for me, I look at it almost like what Mayweather said. He's like, dude, I look at life as a sense of urgency. You know, sometimes I sit around and I think, okay, because in prison, your time is managed to a T. You know, you got movements, you got this, you got locked, you got a shower, you got. So when I'm on the street, I'm thinking like, okay, now have I done everything I could do, or did I waste a window? Do I need to somehow make up here and add here? Or, you know, am I really maximizing all my waking hours that I could be reaching out to people to expand my networking? Or did I mess up today and tomorrow? Do I need to add to that? So I'm always trying to see how I can further myself. And I never settle. Not to say I'm not happy, but I'm not complacent. You know, I feel like I was brought here with a purpose. And for me to see what I see, why would God give me that? Why would God put these thoughts in my head and have all this ambition? And it's like, it not to be blessed with. It doesn't make sense, man. If otherwise, I'd be cool with a goddamn Pinto. You know what I mean? Keep it in a box. I mean, but it's like something drives me, and it almost intimidates a lot of people. Even my family, they're like, man, calm down. You always pumped up. Your voice is this and that, you know? And it's like, it's just a drive within me. So whatever I have is something that I've been gifted with. So I feel it's my duty to give back and to share that energy to help motivate other youngsters so that they can maybe maximize their potential in ways I wasn't able to maximize mine at that age.
Man, I love it. I got a question for you. I want you to coach me because you've done so many interviews and nobody knows Big Herc 916 better than you. So what question should I ask you right now, you know what I mean, that I could really showcase for our audience? Because I think I've done a pretty good job asking these questions, you know, as the host right now, but you've been the host. So the tables are turned right now because I'm interviewing you. But what question didn't I ask you, or what question should I ask you to be able to provide value to our audience right now?
Not to take on a victim mentality, man. You know what I mean? Not to take on a victim mentality. You know, like you said, some people say you go to prison, they say, F that. I could have went in there, man, and been like, man, I never met my dad. Nobody came to visit me. Man, life is effed up. You know, I'm a three-time felon. Man, you know, I'm never going to be anything because of the man and this and that. You know, I could have been one of those dudes, man, angry at the government because I ran in the bank with a pistol. You know what I mean? But I had to accept my responsibility. Once you own up for your actions, once you say that, hey, man, I'm responsible for the things I've done, and move forward and realize that that's not going to keep me from becoming what I want to become, your life changes instantly.
Yo, I want to build on that, brother. Thank you. I'm glad I asked that question because I love this right here. Now, I want to be clear, and this is my opinion, so I'm not going to speak for you, Big Herc, but I don't think that all crimes can be forgiven, like pedophiles and rape, like they get no pass. But I want to say what I'm going to say. But other than doing something like that to children or doing something crazy, you know, I think that there is redemption. You know what I mean? If Jesus could forgive, you know, and whether you believe in God or not, I think that most crimes are forgivable. And I'm sorry, but we're only given, and this breaks my heart to say this, you know what I mean, but on average, we're only given 76 summers. There's only 86,400 seconds in a day. Once they're gone, they're gone. So you lost almost a decade. And with the other stint you did, you lost about a decade of your life. I think you paid for your crimes. You didn't kill nobody. You know what I mean? So again, you know, you paid for your time. I don't think that you need to suffer for the rest of your life. And I think that most people don't understand that they deserve to be productive. They deserve to be happy. It shouldn't be, oh, I just did a decade in prison and I should be happy being a janitor. No, if you've got a voice, if you got passion, if you got value, then life is what you make it. You cannot be a victim. You've got to be able to just take life and make it what you will. And that's what I'm hearing you say. Is that correct, brother?
Oh, you're right on point, man. And, you know, the biggest thing, like you said earlier, when L.A. Williams was talking about what would the guy change, he said he changed everything.
Every damn thing.
You have to – the hardest thing, and I tell people, it's the tar baby, right? You know how when you touch tar, you can't get it off. You wash your hands and it's sticky. Mm-hmm. When you get involved in certain circles of people, friction in, friction out. You try to leave now. Hey, what's up, homie? You too good now? Oh, homie, you can't hang out? You have to make that cut. And a lot of people are steady trying to connect with old people on Facebook, old friends, and they're not going nowhere. It's the same sad circle. So you have to let go of all that. And to move forward, it requires you to change your association, your habits, and what you do on a daily basis. And that's the hardest thing for a lot of people is old habits die hard.
Yeah, absolutely, man. You are on it. So I just want to thank you for taking the time to come hang out with us, man, because, I mean, this has been a blessing. They definitely got to check out your YouTube channel, and then you got a website too, right?
Yeah, website is BigHerc916.com and also FreshOutSeries.com.
FreshOutSeries.com, BigHerc916.com. Listen, go there, man. Go connect with this guy because it's not like he's about a bunch of negativity. This is positivity. He's talking about somebody that programmed themselves in order to be successful. Listen, you probably, that's the reason why you listen to this show is because you want to program yourself. You want to put yourself in the best positions. And I promise you that's going to happen connecting with this guy. This is the show.
Guess all eyes.
We'll talk to y'all next week. Appreciate everybody.
Hey world, this is Sean V. Bradley, and if you need to buy a new or pre-owned car and want to have the best, most convenient experience ever, get full transparency, the absolute lowest price, no stress, best customer service, well, I highly recommend Car.com.
Vice TV presents
I Was a Teenage Felon,
Season 2, starring Sean V. Bradley.
He's the king of clubs.
At 19 years old, part of a multi-million dollar international drug ring. Arrested by the Secret Service, DEA.
This was the largest ecstasy case in United States history.
And somehow this dude becomes a best-selling author and a mega millionaire when he gets out of prison.
Find out how only on Vice TV's I Was a Teenage Felon, Mondays at 10 p.m.
Exclusively on Vice TV.
Did you know that Car.com is a website to connect consumers like you, me, our parents, basically everybody to local car dealers? Car.com helps us find that perfect vehicle. From new vehicles to certified pre-owned, Car.com will help you find the best vehicle match. Car.com practically started the online car shopping experience. Peace of mind and finding your perfect vehicle, it's what they do. Car.com, we do the research, you do the driving. Get started getting that peace of mind today at Car.com.
You're listening to WORK Radio. The only place success comes before work is in the dictionary.
The Against All Odds radio show comes to you every week from the city of brotherly love, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. If you have a question about the show or would like the chance to become a guest and share your success story, we would love to talk to you. You can reach us directly at 856-546-2440 or email us at AgainstAllOddsRadioShow@gmail.com. This program is a presentation of Synergy Records, streaming live coast to coast and downloadable everywhere podcasts are found.
The Against All Odds Radio Show is produced by Sean V. Bradley, CSP. Production and engineering by L.A. Williams. The Against All Odds Radio Show is hosted every week by L.A. Williams and the millionaire car salesman himself, Mr. Sean V. Bradley, CSP. Plus, don't forget, Sean's best-selling book, Win the Game of Googleopoly, is available right now on Amazon. Thanks for listening to the Against All Odds radio show. And remember, where I come from, money provides options. The Against All Odds radio show is sponsored in part by Scarfood, Car.com, and Dealer Synergy.